Hey everyone out there, and thanks for joining us again here at ASAP Nowcast, the podcast for ASAP Now. Happy New Year to all of you. It is officially 2026, and we are kicking off the year with tons more content for you. Now, for many of you who have been with us for quite a bit, you know that every month at ASAP Nowcast, we feature something in audio for you, whether it's from the magazine or something for the podcast only. And this month, I wanted to kick off with a little known tidbit that I learned recently just wandering around my hospital, which is an academic center, which is that the oral boards are changing. Now, I don't really remember the oral boards with really much of any fondness. It seemed like a lot of movement for not a whole lot of benefit. Flying into Chicago, going through all the cases, which felt a little artificial, walking into every room and saying, what do I see, hear, smell? So perhaps many of you have the same kind of recollection about the oral boards. When I heard that it was changing, I was actually quite pleased. Now, while the oral boards is a one and done, in other words, you never have to redo it, I do think it's helpful for all of us in emergency medicine to have an awareness of what it takes to be a newly board certified emergency medicine doc. So we have with us today Dr. Mac Brown, who is both a colleague of mine and former resident, and who is now with MRAPS Invictus for board prep, to walk us through what are these changes to the oral boards. Check it out. Hey everyone at ASAP Now, I have the pleasure today of sitting here with Dr. Mac Brown, who is someone I've actually known for a long time. Mac, I was at your residency, or I guess maybe you were at my residency, but that's probably not fair. But you were a resident, actually, of the program that I'm at, and you were awesome and so smart and had some of the highest scores that residency has seen in ITEs and boards and so on. So now that you're faculty and have your big boy pants, it is a pleasure to come and interview you about the new oral board. So Mac, thank you for joining us.
Hello, hello. Funny story, you're actually my second shift as a medical student, and I remember being so intimidated by you. So you're not very tall, but you're so smart.
Oh man, that's a high compliment coming from Mac Brown. So Mac, you have a lot of hats. So I saw you as an academic fellow for us, then you were a SIM director for us, and now you have, like I said, a fancy pants title. So tell us about that.
Yes, so besides my co-simulation director role at the residency that we are currently at, I also work at MRAP as a core faculty member, and myself and a couple of colleagues made a course called Invictus about the new certifying exam, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, so I remember you telling me about that, and I was like, certa what? So turns out, because I took the boards about 8 years ago, but turns out the oral boards is changing, and it feels like we should at least be aware of it across emergency medicine, not just for those people that are taking the boards. So tell me, what in the world is happening to the oral boards, Mac?
So the kind of the biggest thing, I think it kind of hit everyone a little bit suddenly because there's so many changes going on. RCC, residency is now going to 4 years, and now this new test. And the new test, I feel like, is an awesome progression of kind of skill sets that we should have as physicians. So the old way we used to do, I walk into a room, what do I see, hear, smell? Right? Taking a whole new kind of test you have to learn how to take, practice, and super, like, not intuitive. I've never had a patient where I can't walk in the room and look at them or like smell them, right? Walk into a room, what do I see, hear, smell? It's not great. I think this new way is much more accurate to today's day and age and what you need to know as an emergency physician. So now it's an in-person test in Raleigh, North Carolina, starting in 2026. It's a half-day test, and what you do is you fly out there. There's a couple spots out there that they recommend you stay at. You take it in the morning or in the afternoon, and then you're done.
Cool, to hang out in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yes, I don't know what's in Raleigh, North Carolina, but my buddy Chris, who actually made the course, is right by there, he says it's a lot of fun, so I look forward to eventually getting out there.
Oh man, I'm so biased, because when I took the boards, I had to go back to Chicago, where I actually did residency, and it was like a great reunion, like the year after we all graduated, so I'm a little sad to hear it not be in Chicago anymore, but Raleigh does sound fun, and I'm sure there will be a Reddit thread things to do while you're doing the new boards, or excuse me, the new certifying exam.
Yeah.
So Mac, tell us, I'm with you, man. There's a lot of changes in emergency medicine, like this RRC change, like
all the things you just mentioned. Why is there a new test? Like, I'm like, wasn't virtual awesome? I thought the thing was going to go away, hopefully. But what did ABIM decide?
So ABIM, from reading and talking with some different folks, wanted a more realistic test to today's day and age. When you compare with the previous testing, this new certifying exam is much more akin to what your typical day's work is going to be. There's procedures, ultrasounds, interverbal communication skills, like difficult conversations, as well as medical knowledge and kind of the practicality of all aspects of emergency physician, I feel like is now part of this new exam. Plus, you don't really have to learn how to take a new test because you should kind of know how to do these things to begin with. Whereas the old way, you have to learn how to take that test.
Yeah. I remember reading, I think it was Okada was the book that everyone read. Yep. And I remember buying it like the month before I took boards, reading it and be like, okay, let's try. And I'm with you. It was, you walk in a room, what do you see, hear, smell? And we did that however many iterations in Chicago at ABIM General. So let's go over this new test. Like, what is going to be on it?
To start, there's eight kinds of cases. There's two like thinking cases, I like to call them, but we call them clinical care cases for the course. And what it is you kind of sit down in front of two examiners and you either walk through a case in a very like meta way, or you have to do the prioritization case, which is kind of like medical leapfrog. These cases are all 15 minutes a pop. You get 5 minutes beforehand to kind of review what you're doing before you walk in the door. And then you'll have two of each kind of case in your day. The medical decision-making case is one that was on previous boards. It's the only one that's kind of maintained. And all it is essentially, it's like an idealized discussion. You walk through a full patient encounter with a chief complaint. You ask your history and physical elements. Then they give you what's important. And then you do that again for like elements of labs, imaging, what you're doing after that. And they give you those findings. Then you do disposition planning and everything else after. One pointer here, it's super easy to know when you mess up, because if you have someone with leg pain and you don't ask about erythema and they give you a cellulitic leg patient, like, oh crap,
yeah,
I have made a whoopsie. And that may throw you off, but you just have to keep staying back on track. Another big pointer here is shotgunning is no longer the go-to. Oh, back in the day, right, when I'm doing the old style boards cases, what's an HENT exam for someone with leg pain? I'm doing the whole thing so regimented. Now they can deem you for that if you were to ask something like, hey, I have a patient with chest pain, why am I checking feet? And if I don't have a good answer for it. If you have a good answer, like I'm checking pulses, make sure, hey, they still have, you know, blood flow to their feet, seeing they're a severe atherosclerotic patient, that's a big changeup. And that could bump you up, but it can also bump you down if you're not being careful.
Interesting. Okay, so this is the classic, more or less, see, hear, smell case.
Kind of, but it's not, you don't act in any way.
Okay.
So if I were to say, hey, this patient has chest pain, I would ask, my first kind of prompt would be, I'm going to ask this patient when it started, if it's worse with walking, exercising, walking up a set of stairs in the cold, worse after like they're eating something, if they're having a lot of nausea and vomiting, or a cough.
Cool.
And then you'll say, okay, what physical elements are you looking for?
Okay.
So it's no longer acting for this kind of case. It's just to answering their questions of what you would theoretically ask for this kind of patient. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, very interesting.
Yeah.
So that makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's very classic to oral boards, I think, as a concept. This prioritization one sounds really interesting to me because it sounds like running a room. So tell me.
Yeah, so it's kind of weird in that there's intuitiveness to it, and there's also like kind of not intuitiveness to it. So in this kind of case, you're given a list of patients and you have to triage them first. And then after you triage them, you then have to like prioritize who gets care first, second, and third. Mm-hmm. You're not getting like this detailed lab work. You're not getting CT scans. You kind of have to go with that old like doctor assumption of, okay, I think this person's really sick because their vital signs look like crap. Their historical elements are pointing towards like attention to a thorax. I'm able to get like a bedside x-ray or a point of care ultrasound to confirm that, but I can't get a CT scan, and then I have to either dart them or put a finger thoracostomy in this person. While you're doing that, you have to kind of determine who's the sickest, second, and third most sick. And it's these cases, when I was making the cases for the course, super duper hard, because it's hard to make different iterations of who, like severely sick, not quite as sick, and then third most sick. There's some trickiness here because you also have access to nurses or like an NP or a resident potentially. And having access to them says, hey, why don't you go take care of this patient or go do something for patient two or three while I'm taking care of patient one. So if you have a patient that's like maybe hypoglycemic and you have a patient that's severely hypoxic, do I have my nurse oxygenate the patient that's hypoxic and then I give glucose to a patient that's hypoglycemic, or do I go to the patient that's hypoxic and have my nurse deal with the hypoglycemic patient? And there's like different ways to think about that, and it makes it tough.
Yeah, and is this done in the same format of like someone is giving you prompts? Like, do they ask you like, hey, what room are you going to first? Or do you just have to like guide them in how you think?
So in these two kinds of cases, you just answer their questions. Okay. There's no acting, there's nothing. So the examiner will say, okay, based off of this list, treat who's the most sick and then delegate nursing tasks to the, or delegate tasks to your nurses based off of what needs to happen. So if I have three patients, one's like, one's hemorrhaging from like an arterial bleed, the next one has like an open limb, mm-hmm. and the third one has like a, you know, like something else.
Sepsis or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something sure. like you will need to like see them, but like not right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah.
I will go to the first patient, you know, stop the, you know, put pressure on the arterial bleed, tourniquet, whatever. I'll have my nurse get IV access, start blood. Mm-hmm. And then I would probably ask my second nurse, hey, can you go to the second patient and get an IV in them and start getting them ready for like a reduction for the open fracture kind of thing, okay?
Interesting.
And so it allows you a little more creativity there, but it's also, I feel like, a lot tougher because it's not so like A, B, C, because there can be like A, then like A1, then A2, and then A3, and
yeah.
there's different iterations of that. I think one thing here that we need to, you know, is not known yet because the test has not been done, but kind of what cadence they're going to use. Is it ABC, CAB?
Yeah.
I prefer who's going to die first.
Okay.
Who's going to die second.
Very emergency medicine, yeah. yes.
For me, I'm a simple guy, so for me, that makes it easiest for me to kind of quantify and, or not quantify, but like give an order and structure to how I'm approaching these patients. And then they're also like, another point here, they give you a second sheet with new patients or decompensations.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the patients you may have had before, now decompensating, right?
Yep.
So that patient with shortness of breath now has like a tension pneumo or like a massive PE and they're decompensating in front of you. And so if you don't read it super carefully on that third sheet you get,
mm-hmm.
you can totally miss it and say, oh, I fixed all the patients, I'm good. Whereas like patient A, because you didn't look at them again on the third sheet, it was on the second sheet,
yeah.
has decompensated. So it's just, it's, you know, there's, this one could be rife for like little missteps if you're just not paying attention and looking at all the stimuli and looking at everything in super detail.
Yeah, this is really interesting because I think that is probably the most shift specific. Like, can you run a room? Can you, you know, multitask, mm-hmm. which is actually, I think historically very hard to assess and very mm-hmm. hard to test. So it makes sense that this is, you know, functionally half of your tests, but tell me about what's the other half.
Sure. So that's the first half. So those are all the like, hey, I'm at a table, I'm just answering questions. Now we transition into the OSCE style.
Oh,
yay!
No. Oh no.
So when I graduated med school back in 2020, we saw the OSCEs, but I think my year was the last one that did the OSCEs, or the year after.
Okay.
It was the last one that did the clinical skills OSCE test.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, I had OSCEs, yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it's very similar to that, but there's a group of, like, now residents that I don't think have taken, like, an ABEM.
They don't
or,
know the awkwardness of OSCEs. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Got you.
They may have done it during med school, but yeah. they may also not.
Okay.
And it's always kind of weird when you have an actor going, oh, I have chest pain.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't think you do, sir. so the six kinds of these cases, and I like to divide these up into like the four where it's pure OSCE, and then you have ultrasound and procedures. And we'll kind of differentiate those for now. So ignoring ultrasound procedures for now. The first one of the four like main OSCE cases is the managing conflict case. So managing conflict is what we do at 3 a.m. if you work night shifts with a very aggressive colleague. And essentially just you're helping a patient mm-hmm. and talking to a pissed off consultant.
Yep.
Easy as that, right?
We've never done that in emergency medicine.
No.
Neurosurgery.
yeah, 3 a.m. cardiology consult.
Yep.
And then get yelled at over the phone for
yes.
10 minutes.
Yeah. Of course.
Never forget, intern year was fun.
Yes, I know. That is like a rite of passageway
yep.
and maybe just hazing as a resident. So, yeah, how do you test that? Like,
so
how does the test take care of that?
It's kind of interesting because on the ABEMS video, how they had it, they have one of the physicians acting as the actor for the OSCE case.
Okay.
And they get really into it. Like,
okay.
He's pissed off. He's like hitting the desk. He's like, he's mad. And I thought, oh no, that's gonna be so stressful, especially like taking a test. You're like, should I retort to this? Like, what do I do here? And I think kind of how you approach this is the same that you do always. Bring the levels down. If the person is standing, ask them to sit. If that person is leaning over and like, you know, about to tackle you, want them to lean back and sit and calm. Another thing too, they're going to have something that either you can help them with or meet them in the middle.
Okay.
So, hey, I'm calling a nephrologist for a patient with hyperkalemia, right? And then the patient doesn't have a central line, but I can say, hey, I can drop the central line for you, start trying to treat their hyperkalemia. In the meantime, can you please get them set up for for emergent dialysis? Mm-hmm. And kind of approach like that, where you're helping them, you're not getting mean back to them. Because I think the most important thing here is you don't get aggressive, or you don't push back on them, or you don't be rude to the consultant. I think that's what this is really testing, is your emotional quotient. How well are you under stress with this specific person? I think that also transitions well, just the kind of the, like this, how standard this is, transitions well to the next kind of OSCE case, which is the difficult conversation case. And in essence, this is just kind of breaking bad news. You should be able to do this to not just pass this test, but to be a good physician. Because having seen it done both ways of like, oh, hey, your mom's dead. And then they leave the room. It's just like, it's awful.
Yeah.
And the other side, like being able to do this really well, I think is such an important skill to have. So I think like of all the things this entire test is, I think this is probably the, for me, from an emotional standpoint, probably the most important. Because having been on both sides of this too, giving bad news and receiving it, it does make a big difference if you do it well. But this, you should have a standard algorithm down, be able to approach this like you normally would. Like, you know, I walk in the room, I get low, I get like, tissues ready on the side, lower my voice a little bit, use a softer voice, try and use appropriate, like touching their arm if the person's amenable to it, meeting them in eye level contact, shoulder to shoulder, or like slight off, like 10 degrees-ish.
Yeah.
And really opening my body to tell them, you know, what do you know what happened? This is what we did so far. We couldn't get the heart started again. Your father is dead.
Yeah.
And then giving that time frame after to let them ask questions or let them perceive it. And I think that's so important for you to have that down to begin with and to be able to do this and then go back to everything else, you know?
Yeah, and that was so algorithmic what you did. You were like, I do this. Here's the steps I do it. I, you know, turn my body 10 degrees, which is interesting because, like, we might do this. And again, I had the pleasure of actually being an attending when you're a resident. So it's like, I know we've, you know, I don't know, you and I have talked about this, but me and your colleagues have certainly talked about this on shift. And it's so interesting that the way you have to articulate it and give it for oral boards is to say, not only can I do it in real life, but I can explain what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and then, of course, like, actually do it.
Yeah. So I will say with these acting ones, you don't have to articulate what you're doing here.
Okay.
You just do it. But for me, like, you know, talking about it, this is how
I coach
it. Yeah. This is how I coach residents to it. I used to be terrible at this. I probably still am bad. I don't know. I'm not giving myself bad news, but I've had to really learn how to do this over like a prolonged period of time. I think the common elements in this is just if you react poorly or you don't have an emotional quotient that's amenable to doing this well, that's going to be the kiss of death for these two kinds of cases.
Yep. So that's super interesting because these are really the soft skill questions of the oral boards, which historically I don't think were ever tested. So I understand there's a little bit even more here. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so in the last two kinds of like pure OSCE cases that are on the boards, there are, it's kind of a weird one in that it's called reassessment troubleshooting. And it's a common theme in most ERs where you have boarding, right? Mm-hmm. And you get called, hey, this patient's not doing well. We don't know what happened. Here's their chart. I think somewhat educated guess that why before you enter each case, you get 5 minutes to look at the case stuff before you walk in to know what you're doing. It's specifically to give you time for this one.
Okay.
So the reassessment troubleshooting case, you're taking someone else's chart. You're reviewing it, finding out where there
could
have been
an
error. Pretty much.
Okay.
But you're not. It's not a warm handoff. You're not getting it from a physician. You're getting the chart.
Yep, gotcha.
And so you have to review that chart in super fine comb detail, get your magnifying glass out, get your microscope, look at it super thoroughly.
Yep.
And you have to figure out, hey, what happened here? ABEM's example was someone that had an allergic reaction to a sulfa drug. Mm-hmm. But it could be like, hey, this ECG was misread, or hey, these labs were misunderstood, or this patient was dispositioned incorrectly, right? All these little things could pop up, and I don't know what will, But you have to be prepared for all these possible examples. Super important piece here, you have to communicate all these changes with the patient as well. So make sure you're not throwing your colleague under the bus. So say, hey, if you were to have like a concerning ECG, you know, say you have like a Wellens or another kind of very concerning pattern.
Yeah.
And say, hey, the initial ECG was misread. This is my reading of this now. Your clinical situation has changed and we're going to get you the right people. And they say, oh, that other doctor messed up. So they didn't mess up. It's just part of the system. It's always a systems-based issue.
Yep.
And we're here to support you through this. And we're going to get you the right people to fix everything up.
Yep.
Right? So avoiding blame, avoiding that is so important with this one.
Good.
The last kind of the communication case, and this for me was the hardest one to make cases of because it's so kind of open-ended. It's the patient-centered communication case. This one is pretty much just a normal encounter that you have to kind of dive deep in and figure out what in the dickens is going on, right? Mm-hmm. So it could be simple. It could be someone like, hey, I'm having trouble affording their medications. It could be someone having like some kind of social issue. It could be having a home issue. It could be having something else going on.
But social determinants. It's a social determinants.
It may or may not be.
Okay.
Their example was a social determinants of health where a person was having difficulty for their medications. It's open-ended though, right? Because there's so many elements that you could ask about. Like, I don't know if sexual trafficking will be a thing. I don't know if abuse will be a thing. It's hard to know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when I was making these cases, my resume for the course and everything, you have to really kind of broaden. So I made a ton of these just for preparation point. And it's tough because it's like, it's how do you approach a normal patient with all these issues? How much do you delve into that? But this one's like probing, delving, figuring out what's going on with that patient, what they need, and then meeting them in the middle. And I think if you treat everyone like you're a CEO's mom, mm-hmm. I think that's the way to do it. Like, see what else you can do for that person. And then kind of like, hey, can I do anything else for you? Can I do anything else? And just keep, delving into it to figure out what that specific person needs.
And I mean, it's interesting because as you're going through these soft skill question types, it's rare, I think, that tests do anything other than make you learn to detest. So I feel like these soft skill things are actually things we should all totally be doing on shift, like all the time.
Yes.
So, like, it's actually kind of helpful.
you'd think, but in today's day and age, it's so important to be able to, one, I think ABIM is doing a good thing in fixing the test and making us kind of like more accountable to, are they sending a good physician out in the world?
Yeah.
So,
I think it's how medicine's evolved. Like, medical school, right, is no longer just about grades and GPA. Yeah. Like, they have more well-roundedness, like true for residency to hopefully true for the job market. So I actually really like what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's a section on kind of true medical knowledge and also running abroad. Yeah. There's a section on a lot of soft skills, mm-hmm. actually. And then tell me about this last section, which sounds mostly procedural.
Yes. So how we kind of grouped together, obviously, like, you have the pure medical knowledge one, you have two test givers, and then you're just answering the questions. The next four were the OSCE style. We have a patient and you're talking to them. These last two were kind of just like a kind of a catch-all in the middle kind of deal. So the procedures one is super straightforward. You get consent to do a procedure. You give indications, contraindications, and risks of the procedure. Do it completely. You do the procedure on a task trainer. Then if you get results or anything from it, you then interpret the results. The task trainers are so standard and straightforward. You're not going to get someone with super hard anatomy. It's like, I mean, how many times do you drop a central line in someone like cerebral palsy and everything's so bent and out of shape and you're just praying that you're not going to hit something important, this one is going to be a standardized like mannequin or something like that. It should be.
Okay.
Obviously you can get harder task trainers, but...
And your equipment is given to you.
Yes, everything is given to you. Yeah. You want to ask, obviously part of this is also asking for the equipment, like, if I'm doing... a lumbar puncture, I'm getting a spinal needle, getting a pencil tip or a Quinky needle, yada, 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 and going through all those steps and what you need. Another point here, like walking through is probably pretty important. Oh, I'm approaching this, I'm lining my patient up, leaning them forward, putting them as much like,
hunched over.
Yeah, or I want to get them around a pillow, comfortable as much as I can, approach this from this angle, 15 degrees up from the spinal process, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Be able to interpret the results of that, obviously, is super important. They do give you a list of the procedures you need to know on ABEM. With the Invictus stuff, we just have all the stuff. Like, Jess Mason obviously makes all the videos and stuff. Mm-hmm. We have stuff to make sure every procedure is covered in detail.
Cool.
Ultrasound, very similar. in that you just kind of have to do what like your task sheet says or what your like just the steps of how to do this. So they may ask you, hey, you have a trauma patient, go ahead and do a FAST exam, interpret this image. Okay, your patient's on hypotensive, what would you do now? And just walking through like when you clinically use an ultrasound. This one you will have a standardized patient with.
Okay.
They don't really like answer questions or anything, but they will respond to you. So you can say, hey, go ahead and go to your right lateral side. Go ahead and move to your left lateral. If you're pressing too hard, they can say ow.
Okay.
So like don't jam it in there. We're doing like the pericardial windows and stuff. Don't, put your whole fist in their stomach, right?
Yep.
The examiner will run the machine for you. So it's kind of cool as
well. Depth, gain, et cetera.
Yep.
Okay.
All you do is use the terminology. You don't have to actually touch the machine.
Wonderful.
Just the probe, which is, I feel like, awesome because so many machines are so hard to use.
Yes.
And my little brain struggles with the ones we already have.
Yes. So. And then when they change the version, it struggles again. I'm with you, man. Okay. Yep. Okay, cool. So, but the model is there for you to use as an ultrasound model. Like, that's why the person is there.
Yes.
Basically. Okay, I got you.
I would recommend, because the ultrasounds are one thing that you may not do a lot of clinically, especially outside of residency. Like, if you can get an intern or a buddy to ultrasound yourself, mm-hmm. Obviously offering interns food is usually a pretty fair trade-off.
Yeah. Feed interns. Even just feed interns to be nice, not just to bribe them. Just feed interns, but yes.
I think that's the right thing to do. Keep them fed and watered, and they can grow like plants. So
yes.
I'm all about it.
Well, cool. So kind of big picture. A lot of changes, actually, on the oral boards. Both the logistical ones, like Raleigh versus Chicago, which we can debate later. Mm-hmm. But then medical knowledge section, soft skills section, procedural section. Mm-hmm. So for us... and us at ASAP Now, listening to Nowcast, we have a lot of audience members that took the old boards that probably aren't going to take the boards again because we don't have to. Mm-hmm. What are some takeaways that you just think that people in emergency medicine should know about these oral boards changes? Like, I find this highly educational because I work with residents and academics. I talk to you, so now I know what you're up to. But what are takeaways you have just for our general audience?
I think the biggest things just for everyone in general, not the people that are taking the test, is it's in person again, like, the old days, right?
Yep, to fly out, use your CME money to fund that flight.
you gotta support your residents in supporting your now colleagues in getting them out there, right? It's a little more similar to shift life, but it's also a brand new test. And I could imagine this being extremely stressful, especially with the recent board failure rate being 20% for everyone, like 18% for the first time test taker. And so a lot of the people that graduated will have to take this test, even though they were planning for taking the old one.
Yep.
And so giving these people some grace and helping coach them up as best you can, I think
the new
so
grads
important.
In your practice. Yeah, the new grads. Yeah. Help them flow to shift if they have to go fly out to Raleigh.
Yep.
Like, know that they're going to be a little stressed. Perfect. And then, go ahead.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Feed them like the interns.
Yes. Feed your residents. There's usually
your
a
residents
month.
And your
feed
new
your
grads.
Resident month, you know?
Yeah.
For the people that are taking this test, I think the most important thing, you got to practice. You don't want to run the race and then not finish it, right? Don't go 25 miles in a marathon and then crap out the last mile. You have to finish it if you want to get a good job, you want to get where you want to be, you got to do this stuff, and it's just part of the process.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're an amazing resource. Like I said, I get the pleasure of running into you and bumping into you on shift. Not everyone gets that pleasure. So if someone is taking the new oral boards and wants to prep, where can they find you?
Well, they can see my very eczematous and psoriatic face on Invictus Encore. He's the fuzzy one. Yeah, let's go ahead and just redo
You can
that
redo
one.
That, yeah.
Okay.
So Mac, I get the pleasure of working with you and bumping into you on shift and hearing you talk about things like this that I'm totally unaware of. But for someone who is taking the boards, that doesn't have a you just bouncing around their hospital, where can they find you?
So they can find myself, Dr. Jesse Werner, Dr. Chris Riley on the new Invictus Encore website. It's made by MRAP, and I think it's awesome. It's a really well put together course.
Yeah.
Saying so myself, but I'm
written by someone standing in front of me.
A little bit biased, but it's a course that us three put together, including like Matt Delaney, Misa Hill Morrison, Mel Herbert, and a bunch of other folks at MRAP to really build this up and to give everyone the chance to do well on a test that. Hopefully, y'all pass, but it's a brand new test, so it's tough. We have everything from practice cases. We have video walkthroughs of how to do some of the softer skills, hard skills, medical knowledge stuff. We have obviously all the procedures and ultrasound videos ready to go, so you can practice and review them at your own will. And we have a bunch of other things to help you hopefully ace this test, because we want you guys to practice and get the job you've always wanted and, you know, paying it forward, because people paid it forward to us.
Oh, that's awesome. We got to end on that note. Like, there's no more positive note than that. So, Mac, again, I want to thank you for joining me on the podcast. It has been a pleasure actually just watching how you've grown over the years and have this super cool course out on this new test that, you know, is just kind of dropped on us, teaching people and sharing your excitement and your enthusiasm. So, Mac, I want to say thank you again for what you do and, of course, for joining me on this podcast.
Thanks for hosting me. I look forward to seeing you probably in the next week taking your sign out. So, thank you.
So it really is the end of an era. ABEM Generals no longer, or rather has moved to Raleigh, North Carolina. I am super excited to see the feedback when the first round of boards actually go out. I'm excited to hear what the pass rate is and also see over time what it means for emergency medicine. So if you are taking the boards, of course, you probably need to know these changes. If you're not taking the boards, it's helpful to have an awareness about our specialty and, of course, help your partners out when they need time off to study and also go out to Raleigh so that they can go and pass. That is it for us this month. So as always, there is tons more in the magazine. We are kicking off this year with a magazine full of lots of content that is in your mailboxes this month. From the clinical realm, we have lots of interesting articles. We have a approach to pediatric torticollis with Dr. Anton Hellman. We have an interesting case by the doctors Marcos on a low pulse ox that wasn't hypoxia. We have a great piece by Dr. Westifer about PTAs and how we should maybe not use our scalpels anymore. And we have an interesting protocol about subcutaneous insulin for DKA. From the practice side, there's a great ASAP for you to check out on what ASAP is doing for bad insurers. There's an update on the No Surprise Act, which is really becoming a core part of emergency medicine reimbursement nowadays. There's a piece on the impact of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, raids on ED populations. And just for fun, there's something about Dr. Anne Flower, who many of you have probably seen being talked about in social media and other circles, who is not only a emergency physician, but also a record-breaking long-distance runner. So check it out. As always, tweet us if you have an idea at ASAP Nation, or feel free to tweet me direct at Amy Faith Ho. We would love to hear your thoughts and feedback and keep you tuning in. So thanks everyone for joining us, and we will join you next time.